This episode is brought to you by the Explore More Summit, an online free conference that kicks off April 23rd and runs for 10 days. We have rich, delicious discussions about sex, kink, pleasure, bodies, emotional intelligence, mental health. Oh God, everything that it takes to make relationships thrive and for us to feel better in our lives. If you want to grab your free spot, head to exploremoresummit.com and join in the fun. I would love to see you there.
You're listening to
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
With Dawn Sarah.
With Dawn Sarah.
Thanks.
Bye.
Hey you, Dawn Sarah here with another episode of Sex Gets Real. This week I have an incredible sex educator joining me, Rowan Cofftree. We talk all about sexual liberation and trans day of visibility, what it means to come into a non-binary and trans identity. Rowan's story is so incredible. We also geek out about intersectional sex ed. So we know abstinence-only sex ed isn't really sex ed. And usually most people talk about comprehensive sex ed, but what does it mean to go even beyond that to intersectional sex education? We spend a lot of time rolling around in some really yummy ideas about the ways that our bodies and our pleasure and desire are connected to so many of the other issues in the world. Our Patreon bonus chat is delightful. I get so many emails from cis guys who like watching trans women porn and who masturbate to the idea of trans women. And often they want to know, does this make me gay? And they also want to know, is this super problematic? So Rowan and I roll around all in the politics of desire and shame and what it means when cis dudes are secretly masturbating to trans women. So if you support at the $3 level or above, head over to patreon.com/sexgetsreal and check out that yummy bonus. So who is Rowan? Well, Rowan Cofftree is a writer, facilitator, and healing artist based out of Atlanta, Georgia. With a background in social work, integrative energy work, and social justice organizing, they're passionate about kindling the connection between healing, embodied practice, and liberation. For 7 years, they've served as a gender and sexuality consultant for the UN, where they write and research on violence prevention. They're a lead producer of Sex Down South, a sexuality conference in Atlanta, spearheaded by and centering folks of color and queer folks. And they've helped organize conferences such as Facing Race and Money for Our Movements. They're co-founder of the National Sexual Liberation Collective, and they provide weekly live streams on comprehensive sex ed for the innovative platform O-School, where I am too. Rowan facilitates conversations around the country on gender, race, sexuality, spirituality, and violence prevention. And they also provide coaching and healing sessions for clients. So here is my conversation with Rowan Cofftree, and then head to Patreon supporters and check out our yummy bonus. Welcome to Sex Gets Real, Rowan. I am really excited to have this conversation with you.
Yes, it's so good to be on here.
Yay! So you are a fellow O-Schooler.
Yes.
And you do all kinds of really interesting streams about bodies and queer identity and all sorts of good stuff. Have you had a favorite stream so far?
Oh, God. Oh, that's such a good question. You know, actually, some of my... When I was streaming about, like, being gay, being queer for the holidays... I think that was some of the best interaction I've gotten from people and just some of the most like juicy conversations that came out of those. I did one, like end of November and another one in December, and people just loved those times and had all sorts of things to talk about and all sorts of stories to share about being like queer and trans for around the holidays. So, yeah, those are a couple that come to mind, but honestly, I've loved all of them so far. Yeah. It's been really fun.
Something about the holidays brings out the stories.
It really does.
We just recently had Trans Day of Visibility, and you wrote this beautiful post on your Facebook. And if it feels okay for you, I'd love to read a section of it so that listeners can hear it, and then we can like roll around a little bit in your story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So you wrote, I'm trans. Been trans since birth. Only realized it 6-ish years ago because social conditioning runs deep. I'm non-binary. I use he and they pronouns. I'm not on hormones or having top surgery. I still use he and they pronouns. My masculinity is femme. Gender is complex and also a myth. Not everyone can be visible. Visibility isn't always safe. We all deserve respect and to not be harmed, especially trans women, especially trans folks of color. I'm grateful to every single trans person out there and to all of our trans sisters who led us here. We are medicine for a fucked up society. When I read that the first time, it gave me chills. It's so beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. I get lots of questions from people all of the time who are trying to find the words for their identity. And there's a lot of distress around either not being sure or having been sure for a really long time and then realizing it doesn't fit anymore. And so I'd love to just hear a little bit about your story and kind of finding the language, if you even have, and kind of how you got to here.
Yeah, I resonate with a lot of that. I mean, kind of what I shared in my post of, you know, I've been trans since I was born, but it was only fairly recently in my life. I'm 34 now, fairly recently in my life that I realized that in my body and even realized that it was an option to be who I am. I grew up in a really tiny town, rural area, mountain area. So I didn't have many, you know, possibility models when it came to gender. And then the other piece that was confusing, I was just talking about this on a stream the other day. The other thing that was confusing for my gender, it was my sexuality. I tend to be attracted to all genders, and a lot of my attraction is toward men, masculinity. You know, end of the day, I'm kind of gay boy oriented. But when I was growing up and feeling attraction for a lot of people, but including boys and men, I just assumed, okay, I must be a straight woman, right? I was assigned female, you know, I was told I was a girl. And so I just kind of assumed, well, I guess that fits, you know, even though it never really fit. And it wasn't until, you know, my early mid-20s when I started exploring queerness and exploring my sexuality and realizing that I was not straight. And then it was a couple more years, maybe 3 more years before I really started unpacking my own gender. And it's kind of a funny story, actually. I had just moved to a new town and I was meeting people. I was at a new friend's house who was having a gathering. And I just felt like so at home with this group of people and this group of people that I had just met, right? And I was like, oh, this is great. Like, I'm really, like, sinking into this community. I just feel so, like, I'm just resonating so deeply with these people. And then toward the end of the evening, I look around and every single person, like, except for me, in quotes, was trans. Mm-hmm. And it didn't even really dawn on me until the end of the night. And then that's when it really kind of hit me that, and I'd, you know, had trans friends for a few years at that point. But when I had that profound of a reaction of just feeling so deeply at home, was when it really kind of sunk in that, okay, maybe Rowan, maybe you should look at your own gender and see what's going on there. And so specifically I'm non-binary. So I identify as trans, I identify as non-binary. My gender is very fluid. Part of what I think took me, so long to embrace my own gender identity was, and my hesitation of identifying as trans for a long time was that I only ever saw and knew of very binary models of being trans. So either born male and then transitioning to female or born female and transitioning to male. And I didn't feel like a woman and I also didn't really feel like a man. And so I was just like, well, I must be, you know, tomboy, whatever, like, and never really took it that seriously. And so it wasn't until I actually met another, well, specifically I met another trans man who was not on hormones and did not have surgery and wasn't planning on doing either one of those. And that opened up space in my head and in my heart of like, oh, there are other ways of being a trans man. And then I met a non-binary person for the first time. And then I started meeting more genderqueer people. And I was like, oh, there are other gender, right? Like my head kind of exploded. And I just deeply resonated with many of those identities and different aspects of different identities. Language is a funny thing. Language is so limiting. One of my many, many jobs is as a writer and an editor, and I'm constantly grappling with how limiting language can be. And so, yeah, I appreciate your comments earlier about just like how hard it can be to find words, right? And find words to really explain our identities, especially around gender. And so right now, you know, I identify as non-binary trans because it fits the best. And with the like deep knowledge in my body that my gender is really fluid and it kind of ebbs and flows on any given day. And sometimes I do feel like a man, and other times, more rarely, sometimes parts of me do feel like a woman. And usually it's, you know, all these beautiful places in between and outside of that.
One of the lines that I love so much, because I've been doing a lot of thinking and talking about the construct of masculinity lately, and just one, toxic masculinity, but also kind of how masculinity by definition in our culture is often just not feminine. And so I really liked your, my masculinity is femme. And I'd love it if you could just tell me a little bit more about what that means for you personally.
Yeah, thank you for asking that. And I actually, I hesitated putting that line in there because it's complicated, right? And my own experience does not represent a lot of people's experience. And so I'm always a little cautious of, you know, walking that line between putting my truth out there and then the ways it can kind of be, especially for us trans folks, like the way that individual narratives can just be taken and, you know, turned into, oh, well, that must be everybody's experience kind of thing. And so femme is this beautiful identity that I would never claim for myself. Like, I would never say, oh, I'm femme at this point in my life because I'm aware of how I'm perceived by the world, right? And so in general, I move around in the world and people perceive me as more masculine of center. I think on any given day, I'm probably read by, you know, regular folks out in the world as maybe a butch lesbian or something, or a man, or for people who may be aware of trans people, they would probably read me as trans masculine. And that's just because of the way that I dress and because I have short hair. Sometimes it's the way that I carry myself, but I can be real gay boy in the way that I carry myself too. So, I mean, it depends on the day. But energetically, the way that I express myself outside of my clothing choices is actually pretty femme. So again, I wouldn't identify as femme because I know the impact of, I wouldn't claim that identity because I know of how I'm typically perceived by the world. And that just doesn't feel like mine to claim. And I don't experience the same kind of treatment from the world that most femmes do. Things like femme invisibility, things like constant harassment, you know, it could go on and on. Definitely aspects of my identity are femme, like as an adjective rather than as a like identity. They're very femme as kind of an adjective. And it's mostly my masculinity. Like mostly my most masculine parts are super just very, very femme, you know, very feminine. my more like feminine parts are the parts of me that I like are more woman close to woman, you know, are much more masculine. Like, that's just kind of the way my gender seems to work in my body. And it's still something that I'm unpacking. It's still something that I love geeking out with other people around and hearing other stories as I kind of, you know, continue to explore my own gender. But yeah, I think it's definitely a, I don't know, I could geek out for a while around masculinity too, but I'll stop there.
Something that I've just been thinking about a lot lately because of some of the conversations I've been having, which, you know, like sometimes I get to have, no, I won't say sometimes, nearly daily, I get to have really awesome conversations with really awesome people. And so my brain is just constantly being like sexed with all of the ideas and the thoughts and the shifts in how I perceive the world. And one of the things I've been thinking about a lot lately is around language and then the ways that we experience our humanity and how like words are static and we kind of attribute like static, singular, certain definitions to them. And then we try to use these things that are pretty static to our experiences of life and humanity and our bodies, which are constantly changing. Like every single day I change as a human because of the interactions I have and the thoughts I think and what my body is doing that day. And so, yeah, it's kind of this like weird thing of, you know, our language is constantly expanding because I think we're starting to realize that there's so many different ways we can be. And still at its core, you know, language is somewhat limiting. And at least I don't think in the foreseeable future will language have the fluidity that our experiences have. And so we're going to have to constantly be just kind of grappling and shifting and finding better words and different ways to use them. And and I think that makes some people comfortable because it's like, oh, I can just keep finding new ways to express myself. And I think for other people, it makes them deeply uncomfortable because they want the certainty of this is just how it is and I don't have to keep thinking or working on it.
Right? Right, absolutely. And I mean, language defines how we experience the world, right? Like, if we only have one word in our language for, like, the word love, like, we only have one word in our language for that for so many hundreds of different kinds of experiencing that emotion or that act. And it really kind of dictates then how we experience the thing. And yeah, language is just so fascinating. I feel like you're hitting the nail on the head with, we have so many static words for something that is so fluid, that is just so deeply ever changing and changeable. So then things like identity can be really liberating when, you know, when I find words to describe my identity that really like put voice to certain parts of me, it can be so deeply liberating.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, it can trap me, you know, I can become over-identified with that identity to a point where I feel like I can't ebb and flow out of that. And honestly, part of the way, one of the things I struggle with that I've heard other trans folks talk about, is presenting, you know, the way that I present myself in the world, especially since I'm not on hormones, I'm not having surgery, I'm not, you know, aiming in those directions anytime soon. I don't often express the more, like, I don't dress as femme as I might otherwise because of this idea of like static identity. And, you know, it's a little more intimidating to actually like be out there and as fluid publicly in my gender as I might like to be. Because even within queer and trans community, like there can be this idea of like, oh, well, if you're this way, then you have to present this way. Or if you're that way, you have to present that way. And if you look different on any given day, like, oh, what I like, it can raise eyebrows, right? Like it can be a thing, where people can, I know I carry this fear that's mostly unfounded, but comes from somewhere, right? But this fear that, oh, my trans card will be taken away.
Yeah.
If I'm, you know, overly femme on some day and I am not on hormones and haven't had surgery and all these things, like, oh, well, I must just actually be cis after all, you know? And a lot of that's just internalized brainwashing, right? And there is some truth of, you know, how we can be as communities, how we can really kind of unintentionally limit, you know, what's okay and what's not okay to express just by what we validate.
Yes. Yeah, I had that fear too around losing my queer card when after like 13 years of being in relationships with cis women and then with trans individuals, I fell in love with a cis man. And it was at the time I thought, I'm going to lose everything. Like, I'm going to be kicked out. I'm not going to get invited to the parties anymore. My friends are going to start treating me the way that I've seen them treat so many of their straight friends. And it was before the word queer had really kind of taken on what it has been over the last couple of years. And that was a place where I spent several months just silently sitting in my fear. And I think that happens to so many of us. And I had to kind of get to this place of, well, one, I can't just keep sitting here wondering because it's I'm suffering. And two, if I just have some conversations with people I love, then maybe I'll feel a little bit better. And of course my friends accepted me and didn't think differently of me. And of course I was fine. And I know that's not everybody's experience, but, you know, my friends were and are just these like beautifully accepting, open people, and they love me no matter what words or identities I'm using. And, like when I first came out as a lesbian years ago, I mean, this was like in the early 2000s, I did that thing that so often we do when we're finally like, whoa, I just discovered this thing about me. Now every single moment of my life is going to be rainbows and dyke stickers. And like, I'm going all in, you know? And I think there's this fear often of people of like, holy crap. I've been married for 20 years and I think I might be bi, or I think I might be trans or gender nonconforming. And that must mean everything has to be torn down and I lose everything. Right. And so I love and appreciate so much how your story is that it took years of kind of being in your queerness before you found this trans identity, and then more time to kind of even meet a non-binary person and think, hey, maybe that's me, of this kind of like gradual opening and discovery that I think is just really inviting for people to hear of, like, we don't have to like tear everything down and start over or end the relationships we're in. We can just kind of go on this journey and see where we go.
Yeah, a lot of mine has definitely been just kind of, I mean, I think that's in a way the way a lot of my life moves, is I am very busy and doing all the things. And there's also a slowness to my life in terms of just things will unfold when they're supposed to unfold. And I have learned more or less, sometimes less, but you know, more or less to just trust that and to not try to push it and not try to force it. Because when I have, that's when I get, ironically, when I try to force something and force my knowing of something is when I become most disconnected from myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's some wisdom.
Whether it's porn or mainstream media, everyone has ideas about what it means to be a man. How much hair you should have on your face or your head, how your genitals should work, and what kinds of sex you should be having. Of course, everything about this show is all about dismantling those things. Case in point, this episode with Rowan Cawtrey, where we kind of unpack what it even means when we're talking about masculinity. But there's a big difference between these ideological conversations and actually existing and thriving in your body in a world that tells you you're not good enough as is. Hims is actually sponsoring this episode, which is kind of funny because we're talking about masculinity. But anyway, Hims is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness for men. In fact, it's a new wellness brand that connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat things like hair loss and erection concerns. if Alex were to come to me and say, hey, I'm feeling really insecure about how my body is working or the way that my body is changing, the one and only thing that I would care about is connecting him with a real doctor who could give him those medical grade solutions. And Hims does that very thing. No waiting room, no awkward doctor visits, no lines, and everything is shipped directly to your door at quite a savings. So if you're a guy out there who's feeling like, I really do want to do something for myself around skincare, hair loss, or sexual wellness, then check out Hims, because they are centering you. So you can try Hims for a month today for just $5. We'll get you started for just $5 while supplies last. You can see the website for full details. This would cost hundreds of dollars if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. So go to forhims.com/SGR for Sex Gets Real, ED. That's forhims.com/SGRED. Check it out.
So you did an O-School stream recently on queer trans love stories in like media and pop culture. Mm. And your story of, whoa, I was in this room of trans folks and I felt so at home. Maybe that's important. And then like, holy crap, I just met a trans person who's not on hormones and isn't going to have surgery. And then, oh my God, there's a non-binary person, of kind of like, holy crap, I didn't know what my options were because I had never seen them represented before. Mm. And so kind of like pop culture can do some pretty awesome things when it comes to showing us the art of the possible. Mm. So what are some of the ways that you've seen queer and trans love stories portrayed to now? And what would you love to see more of?
Ooh, yeah. Well, I do want to start this conversation with the caveat that I have a terrible memory. And so I did that stream with my dear chosen fam and bestie, Jess St. Louis, who has a wonderful memory, and we watch a lot of movies together, and she is great at remembering names of movies and remembering characters, and I am fairly terrible at that. I can thank my dad for that amazing memory skill. So knowing that I will probably forget most of the names of the movies that I'm thinking of, I wish I had seen any kind of queer stories growing up. I had no relationship to any kind of queerness growing up, except to know that gays and lesbians existed and were usually treated terribly. And then I don't even think I really learned about transgender until I was like in my late teens, and then I left my hometown and was exposed to some more things, which was great. But in terms of media, yeah, I didn't really see queerness in any media. God, I think what's that movie? Oh, G.I. Jane was like one of the queerest movies that I had ever seen as a teenager growing up, and she's not even queer, right? Like, she's just in the army and doing this like training for the SEALs or whatever it was. And then there's an allegation that she might be gay at some point in the movie that, you know, is proven false. And I think that was maybe one of the first movies that I saw where there was an allegation that she was gay, and that would have been terrible. But I don't think anybody was explicitly saying, oh, lesbians are gross or anything along those lines. And so even in the context of that, it was like, oh, a step further of maybe lesbians aren't gross, right? Like in my head. So, I mean, very, very few possibility models. Like this was how low the bar was. Yeah. And so then more recently, you know, fast forward 10, 15 years, my friend and I have, you know, had a wonderful tradition of watching gay movies together. And the bar is still pretty damn low.
Yeah.
One thing we were saying on our stream is, because we were talking specifically about trans identities in movies and trans love stories, and like, God, the bar is at, oh, the trans person doesn't die. That's wonderful. Yes! You know, like, and that's just so, yeah. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that folks of color were saying the same thing of like, oh, well, there's like one person of color in the movie and they didn't die. That's great. You know? So it's kind of always, it's been this history of marginalized communities of just like A, not being represented, or B, if we are, it's either a caricature or some terrible depiction or the evil character. Like, how many times does the bad guy in, like, a James Bond movie or any kind of action movie, how many times is it a very effeminate man that's also evil, you know? Like, evil is associated with femininity. Shocking. So these layers of, like, okay, if there is someone represented, is it a caricature? Is it, you know, the bad guy or the, like, some kind of just offensive depiction of yes. who we are? Or do they die, you know? Even really, like, beautiful portraits of amazing people, like Boys Don't Cry, like, are also themed around violence and the death of it, you know? Like, themed yeah. around the violence that we experience, which is, on the one hand, great to get those stories out there so mainstream folks know the violence that we face. And, you know, it just kind of perpetuates this one single narrative. So, I would love to see more. Well, the one that kind of still sticks out, and it's definitely not a perfect movie by any means, but the one that sticks out is a trans love story, is the movie Boy Meets Girl, where this trans woman it's kind of just like a typical love story, and she happens to be trans. And so being trans is a theme through the movie, but it's not fetishized, it's not exoticized for the most part. She's deeply desired by multiple people and not in a fetishized way. Like, she's actually just, like, she's the best character of the movie, and, like, people crush on her and people want to be with her. And it's got a queer theme of, like, her and this other woman, so this lesbian trans narrative. So there's just a lot of, and she doesn't die. And it, like, actually, like, gets the relationship she wants at the end of the movie, you know? Like, it's just it's a beautiful story. And again, not perfect. There are definitely things I would critique. And the other major thing is it's all white. Like, it's pretty much all the major characters are white. And so I would love to see, kind of building off of that, you know, baby steps building off of that. I would love to see more just, like, love stories or happy story or, like, you know, beautiful stories of trans people thriving. I would love to see stories of non-binary people. I would love to see stories of people whose gender is, like, beautifully trans or queer in some way, but that not being, like, the capital T theme of the movie, you know, like, having it just be, oh, well, this person happens to be trans and they're also living their life like anybody, played by a trans person. Let's hire some more trans actors.
Yes, please.
but kind of just normalizing rather than exoticizing or fetishizing, and not just talking about the violence and not just talking about what we face. I would love to see more trans folks of color as leading roles, like movies about them. And again, have that not being fetishized or exoticized, trans folks with disabilities, like all of these intersections that we don't, you know, like once we get trans people, like trans people are now more in the media and it's mostly white binary trans people. So again, it's a really limiting narrative, not dissimilar from everything else in Hollywood. Right.
Right.
So I guess, just more folks like my communities, right? Like more folks like my beloveds that we don't necessarily see ourselves in any kind of mainstream story. So, and I wonder what that would have been like. I think back on that and wonder who I would have become sooner if I had seen stories like that as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. To even have known that it was an option.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I remember when Boys Don't Cry came out. It was right around the time that I was starting to kind of come into my queerness. And I remember watching that movie. And one, of course, it's terribly tragic. But two, feeling so attracted to their expression of gender, to the way that Hilary Swank was presenting in that film. And being like, whoa, what does this mean? That mm-hmm. I totally wish I was Chloe Sauvigny.
Yes.
You know, there's something here.
Yep.
Yeah. And like, and it was so great to see like Sense 8 having a trans character in a lesbian relationship.
Yes.
And you're right. Like, for many years, I went to the Rehoboth Queer Film Festival in Delaware.
Mm.
And my friends and I, there was a group of like 10 of us that went, well, they went many more years than I did, but I went for a couple of years with them. And we would inevitably be like, all right, we're going in for our 2 or 3 movies today. And when we get home, we're going to need to like decompress, because all of the movies were sad and depressing and about families that rejected you if you came out, and losing your kids and being killed. I mean, there was like just literally so much death and, or AIDS, right? AIDS is going to kill you. And I just went to the Vancouver Queer Film Festival this past summer, and it was such a different experience, because the vast majority of the films were sweet and real and complex and had a diverse range of care. And I attribute this to the curators of the film festival as well. But, you know, like there was just cute, quirky love stories that just happened to be between a Muslim lesbian and a Mexican lesbian. And there were these cute stories of queerness down in an indigenous community in Mexico. Mm. And it was so different, because I was enjoying and delighting in the films and not feeling, when I walked out, like soul crushed. Like, what a wonderful thing. And why isn't there more of that, you know, just available to people outside of film festivals?
Yeah. That's the complexity that I'm craving, you know, and that's what really helps. I mean, complexity in general is not something we hold well as a society. Right? Like, we're pretty much wanting the opposite of that. And this kind of simplicity that isn't possible, that doesn't exist, and actually gets us into trouble and in my opinion, contributes to a lot of violence, both internally and collectively.
Yeah.
And so it's those film festivals that hold such beautiful, nuanced stories, and not much in the mainstream. There's just not that many storylines out there. And the thing also, it makes me think about just trauma and the process of healing through trauma, and this like cyclical ways that we heal through trauma. You know, giving voice to trauma is so important, and giving voice to these stories of trauma is so important. And we're a traumatized community, you know, like many, like multiple communities of people who have just experienced so many levels of trauma from society and from these systems. And so putting voice to that is necessary and essential. And there's a point also where we have to be in our joy as well, and celebrating our joy and stretching into our joy. And, you know, when we can't stretch into our joy, leaning into stories from other people that have stretched into their joy. And, you know, if all that's getting out there is the stories of trauma, that's not full healing. That's getting stopped at some point. And so it's not that these stories aren't being told. But then it's that, you know, that funneling system of what actually makes it to the mainstream and whose stories actually get heard at the end of the day because of what sells, and then capitalism, and we could just go on and on.
That's a wormhole.
Yep.
Because you're right. Like, there are people creating media around this. You know, like, I loved Jen Richards' online show, her story about trans women.
I haven't seen it. My friend was raving about it.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. And, like, so many of the films at the Queer Film Festival, and, like, it's so frustrating that, like, the big name distributors, like, you know, Paramount and Warner Brothers and stuff, they won't pick those stories up. They'll go to Sundance, and if we're lucky enough that one of the queer stories gets a whole bunch of awards, then they might pick it up. But otherwise, it's lots of, like, self-funded, Kickstarter-y type things, which are great that that's an option, but then it tends to only kind of get distributed among that person's community, and it's not seeping into the living rooms of people who maybe don't have access to communities like that, and we desperately need that.
Yeah, for sure.
I was looking over your website, and you were talking about the fact that you teach intersectional sex education. And for so many of the people who are listening, they have heard me talk about abstinence only sex education, and which I can't even label sex education, and comprehensive sex education, and the importance of like teaching emotional intelligence and body wisdom and all that kind of stuff. But I loved that you had this phrase, intersectional sex education. And I would love to hear a little bit more about what that is and kind of what types of education you're bringing into the spheres of sexuality through that.
And I think that's, it's from this place of, I never got this kind of education. So I'm like, why aren't people talking about this? and it stems from this, collective that I'm a part of called the Sexual Liberation Collective, and the way that we approach education that we do with communities. But it's really looking at, like, so we're all sexed bodies, right? Like, we are born in a society that is like largely sexually repressed, but also obsessed with sex in this really kind of unhealthy way, like systemically as a society. And so just as bodies in this world and in this society, we are sexed, you know, like people make assumptions about our bodies. We're interpreted certain ways. We have desires. Even if those desires are not sexual, like we have desires. And so there's that piece. And then also our bodies are raced and classed and gendered, and we can't separate any of these other identities away from our bodies too. The identities we hold for ourselves, and then the identities that other people put on us without knowing us, just by like looking at us. And when we're talking about the body and when we're talking about body healing, we can't, in my opinion, can't teach one of those without talking about the rest of them. And so the ways that we experience or don't experience any kind of sex ed growing up, and then the ways that we're taught to relate to our bodies and the ways that we're taught to relate to our desires and our sexualities. You know, my experience of how I was taught to be in my body growing up and how I was taught to feel about the desires that I had, how I was taught to feel about my body, is highly linked to my race as a white person. It's highly linked to my class background in this working class community. It's highly linked to gender, obviously, in the way I was just assigned female and assumed female. And highly linked to the fact that I don't have any disabilities. Highly linked to the fact that I have been a thin person my whole life, and then relatively tall. And so carrying all that privilege. All of these ways that these broader systems in my society impacted how I learned to just be in my body and feel comfortable or uncomfortable in my body, how dissociated or not I was from my body. And then also like desires, you know, what kind of desires were okay. And so it's this idea that we can't separate any of those things, and that we do a disservice to people when we try to educate without also talking about how it's tied to everything else. Because what I was taught was different than what other folks were taught, you know? Also religion. I didn't mention religion yet, but that has a huge impact. Yes. So whatever kind of religious identities or communities we grow up in, or spiritual communities or identities, can have a huge impact. And so, yeah, I think the thing that gets me most jazzed about sex ed, right, is like, you know, I can do the STI trainings and the safer sex talks and all that, and those are great. But I really, really love holding space to talk about the emotional piece, like what you mentioned around like boundaries and consent and how that fit, like what do we do, you know, and all this emotional relational piece that is not often included, you know, if like really good comprehensive sex ed will include that. And then going further and talking about like, okay, but how is this different for you and for you and for you and for you and for me, you know, like how is that different because of who we are and because of all these systems of oppression that we live under, that just highly impact our experiences in day-to-day life.
Yeah. I'm just like, there's so much I want to say. I have a lot of listeners of this show who are from the Middle East.
Mm.
And so far, I've only ever gotten messages from men. And so many of them reach out and say, hey, I'm in Iran. I'm in Pakistan. I'm in Iraq. And I live in communities where we literally can't talk about this. I can't say these words. And I don't know how to get okay with my pleasure. And that's important. It's important to be able to name that people in different places around the world from different religions and in different bodies are experiencing all of these things very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And even in a single country like the United States or like Canada, I think it's so important for us to recognize that like the way that indigenous folks experience their bodies in the world are different than the way that Black folks experience their body in the world and are different from the ways that Muslim folks and queer folks and trans folks. And I think people are scared of acknowledging differences, you know, because it can be dangerous to point out other. But I also think there's richness in that, which is kind of what you're speaking to, of like, we're in bodies, yes. And so we universally share the fact that we're inhabiting these bodies. And we can probably make some assumptions that most of us want to feel safe and seen and loved and to be able to express ourselves. But then, like, the ways that everyone around us is making decisions and using language about our experiences for us, the way we're categorized, like, of course it's going to impact how we experience pleasure and whether or not we can set boundaries and whether or not we feel like we have the power to say something in the moment. I mean, like, it's so important. So I love that you've given language to this kind of sex education of, like, it's not only about self and wisdom of self and permission and being able to share, but it's also recognizing that, like, the way I experience the world as a fat person is different than the way that maybe you experience the world being in a thin body. And we can talk about both of those things without it taking away from, right?
Right.
So I love that you've got this language and you're offering this training. It's so desperately needed.
Yeah. And to be clear too, I did not come up with this language at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, it, I don't hear much of it, you know, like I hear some people talking about it and not that many. So, I think what you said about power too, you mentioned power. That's a major piece of it, right? Of like, when we're talking about sex ed and just sex in general, like, if we're being real, we're acknowledging huge power dynamics, and we have to talk about, like, you know, if we're talking about assault, if we're talking about boundaries, if we're talking about consent, like, there are themes of power throughout all of that, of like, do we have power over our own bodies? Do we have agency over our own bodies? How can we assert agency? How do we be mindful of times that our agency might be taken away, that kind of thing? And then when we go deeper, like, how can we talk about that without acknowledging the systemic power of, like, who actually has agency over their bodies, who society recognizes as having agency over their own bodies, and who historically has not had agency over their bodies as recognized by society, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other interesting thing is when, in terms of, like, acknowledging difference, I have seen most often that it seems to be white liberal folks who seem to be the most afraid of acknowledging difference. Because it comes from this, like, color blindness, right? Of like, oh, well, we just shouldn't talk about it. Like, we're all one, right? Like, that feels safer. Mm-hmm. And that is often, you know, so many of the folks spearheading sex ed work and, like, getting more sex education out there, like, in the mainstream, right? A lot of the major, you know, players in those fields are white liberal folks.
Yep.
And there can be this fear that's, like, deeply embedded in white liberalism of just being afraid to name difference when difference is actually essential to the conversation.
Yeah, because if we can't name the difference, then we can't, like, actually help people to access the resources that they need or maybe that they're not getting or to name the things, right? Like, I mean, access to resources is a huge thing. Like, if I can't access housing, then how the hell am I going to find a way to have, like, yummy, pleasurable, erotic experiences? And if I can't access condoms or hormone therapy or, you know, just a place where people aren't commenting on my body, then how am I ever going to feel safe to explore my body as a place of joy? I mean, like, people manage it, but we have to be able to talk about that. And it's just so... I want to believe that because of the internet and social media and people doing work like yourself, that for young people, it's changing, that they're starting to have some access to this. But, like, there was never a single point in all of my years of school that, well, one, anybody ever talked about pleasure,
right.
But, you know, that anybody ever would have talked about, like, trauma and oppression and... And I don't know, like, bullying, it was never mentioned. And it was kind of that thing, like, if we don't talk about it, then nobody will notice.
Yeah, it's a very, like, sweep it under the rug kind of mentality, right?
Yeah.
And then the default is the oppressive systems at the end of the day, right? Like, if we're not naming the things, then the things are just going to persist. So,
Yeah. A lot of the work that you do is around sexual liberation. And I would love it if we could just start with, how do you define sexual liberation?
That's such a good question. I feel like it's different every time that I talk about it.
Perfect. I love it. I love that. Let's see what version we get today.
To me, sexual liberation is being free and empowered in my own body, to be connected to my desires, and whether those desires are sexual and whether they're non-sexual, it's having that, having agency over my own body, having that deep connection to my own body, having a relationship with my own body that feels authentic and genuine and that hasn't been defined for me by society. I mean, I see sexual liberation when I think of, a sexually liberated society, right? Like, when I really dream into that, of what would that be like? I see it as being a society where we can all embrace our desires without shame and without fear and with the utmost consent, right? Like, consent being prioritized, where we're not yucking each other's yum in terms of desire. Like, I'm into this, you're into that, great. We don't have to like each other's thing, and, you know, we don't have to shame it either. It comes back to consent so many times, right? Like, it just, so much of it is around consent and just having agency over our own bodies, that we're not, having to survive in a society where we, like, where we're taught our bodies are not our own, where so many of us are taught our bodies are not our own, and then the folks that are, that don't experience that kind of oppression, like, then they're brainwashed with this kind of entitlement that's also just deeply harmful, like, obviously harmful to everyone else, but harmful to them too, you know, everybody suffers. And I also see sexual liberation as deeply entwined with all other forms of liberation, because we're talking about the body, right? And I, the collective that I'm a part of, we geek out about this all the time in terms of, like, one of the most effective ways of keeping a population of people oppressed is disconnecting them from their own bodies, right? Like, our bodies hold wisdom, our bodies hold deep, deep intuition and gut instinct, and our bodies know what we want. Our bodies are, like, going with Audre Lorde was writing about how our bodies being this, this place of where deep desire is born. And when we're in tune with our own desire, you know, what the hell can we accomplish when we're in tune with our own desire? Like, we accomplish revolutions when we're in tune with our own desire. And so it's a super effective strategy to have a society where we're shamed for our bodies, we're shamed for our desires, we're shamed for our sexualities, and everybody, right? Like, not just queer and trans people, but everybody, pretty much, I would say, is in some way probably shamed, if they're, unless their desires are, like, fit in this tiny, tiny little narrow version of what's acceptable, and their bodies are, like, absolutely perfect. And then you still hear, like, these people have body shame, right? Like, it's so pervasive. And it's hugely effective of just creating a society full of people that are, like, when we're disconnected from our bodies, we're disconnected from this deep internal source of power, this deep wellspring of power. And so that's also why sexual liberation is so important to me, not as, like, the most important form of liberation, but an integral, interconnected, liberation that we need to focus on, along with all of the other, you know, fights for liberation that we're in.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, I think there's something really important around not only being able to connect into our inherent wisdom and the things that our bodies are capable of, also being able to just really, like, stand in self and know, like, I'm inherently worthy and I'm inherently enough, and to be able to be in community with others, I think is so important too. And I think that's another place where, you know, thanks capitalism and colonialism, that we've been really struggling as human beings is feeling so isolated. And, you know, I just have to imagine that, I mean, I have some experience with this, so it's not, like, just pure fantasy, but, like, I have to believe that if almost all of us were taught to trust our bodies and to listen to our bodies, and we were given the tools and the skills that we needed to be emotionally intelligent and empathetic, to be able to know, hey, when I have this feeling come up that's really, really tough to be in, maybe I was rejected, I'm going to survive and I'm still lovable. And I have community that can hold me through that. There would be such a shift, because instead of the power grab and instead of the, I need access to your body in order to reinforce my worth. So many different things would change. And of course, you know, we have to be able to talk about, like, violence and racism and ableism and all of those things. But, like, when I just really think about, like, what would blossom from a place of all of us from the youngest of ages being given permission to know and experience our bodies free from trauma and harm, and to be deep in community that could hold us, right? So that, like, even when things did really hurt or we really messed up, knowing, hey, all these people have my back. And even though this person said no, it has nothing to do with my worth whatsoever. The ways that we would relate, like, I feel like consent wouldn't even really have to be a conversation, because it would just be an inherent experience of, I want to be in community with these people. And so, of course, I want to care for them.
Right. We talk about consent so much because it doesn't exist, right? Like, because it's not the norm. So then we have to talk about it. Like, God, what would that be like to live in a society where it was just given?
Yeah.
Where it was just automatic.
And, like, I think that's where so much of the work is for, like, each and every person who's listening. I've been having so many conversations lately because of, you know, the Explore More Summit and the podcast and a whole bunch of the reading that I've been doing. And so many of these really wise people who you know, the majority of their awesome wisdom is coming from, like, Black queer feminists, is just, like, we have to be able to envision what's beyond liberation if we want to make sure we're kind of, like, headed in that direction. And so, like, for everybody listening, what is that vision? Like, when you think that you're most liberated and free, and then everybody else is most liberated and free, What might that be like? What conversations won't we have to have because we'll just tend to each other so beautifully? And what conversations will we have with ease and joy? And, like, I love that your definition of sexual liberation invites in these like really rich, beautiful, visionary conversations.
Yeah, I mean, that's what gives me life, right? That's what keeps me doing this work, is having those visions and sharing those visions and hearing other people's visions. So yeah, no, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, we are about to go record our little bonus conversation for Patreon, and we're going to talk about the politics of our fantasies, because before we started recording, you and I were talking about some of the emails that I get from cis men who watch and masturbate to trans women porn and some of the questions they have. So if you're a Patreon supporter, head over to hear our bonus chat. We're going to talk about the politics of fantasies and cis dudes getting off on trans women porn. But before we do that, I would love it if you would share with everyone how they can stay in touch with you, how they can find you online, any cool things you've got coming up maybe with O School, because I'm sure they're going to want to stay in touch after hearing this.
Yes, absolutely. So you can follow me at Rowan Cauchtry on all social media. So that's RoanCauchtry. And that's my handle for Instagram, Twitter. You can find me on Facebook, Rowan Cauchtry, sex educator, I think. And then my website is rowancauchtry.com. So stay tuned for that. And I've got some other projects that I am going to be launching before too long. Yeah, I'm one of the pleasure pros on O School. And so you can find me streaming multiple times a week, usually. This month, I'm going to be streaming. Well, April into May, actually, I'm going to be streaming every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern time on recognizing emotional manipulation and abuse. Specifically talking about emotional abuse because it's harder to recognize often and a lot of people are impacted by it. And so talking about both recognizing signs and symptoms and recovering and preventing. And then, yeah, a bunch of other streams on O School in between. I'm also going to be facilitating the Queer Jam, which if anyone has not heard of it, check it out. It's run by this organization called Yes. So you can go to yes.org/queerjam2018, I think. And it's this beautiful retreat, kind of week-long retreat out in the mountains of Santa Cruz. One of the most transformative experiences I have been a part of. I've done a few of these jams and it's absolutely profound and weaves a lot of what we've been talking about in this conversation in terms of liberation and healing and the personal and the systemic and just a really beautiful space. So check that out. And yeah, I'm sure there's more, but like I said, I have a terrible memory. So that is me.
Well, I will, of course, have all of those links in the show notes for this episode, as well as at sexgetsreal.com.
Oh, my God.
So be sure to check that out.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah, tell me.
One more.
No,
Sex Down South, a conference that I help run here
in
Atlanta.
Oh, my God. It's so good. Oh, it's so good. Everybody go to Sex Down South.
It's great. Check it out. It's in September.
Yeah. Yay, Sex Down South. So I will have that link, too, in the show notes and at Sex Gets Real. Rowan, thank you so much for being here with me and just, like, rolling around in these really big conversations and ideas. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for all the rad work that you're doing.
Thanks. To everybody listening, if you have questions for me that you want me to field on a future episode, head to sexgetsreal.com. There is a contact form. I love hearing from all of you. And of course, Patreon supporters, head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal to check out the bonus chats from this week and all the other weeks. If you support at the $3 level or above, you get access to all that yummy extra content. And I just got my first $50 a month
Woo!
Supporter. Yeah,
yes.
So like high 10 to the person who's supporting the show. They're going to be getting monthly boxes full of like sex goodies from me
yes.
as a thank you. So supporting the show from $1 up is amazing. And we're going to go record our bonus chat. So thank you to everyone who listened. I'll talk to you next week.